when it comes to my own work, what I actually look at is how we disclose personal information to others. And, you know, when it comes to failures or negative experiences, maybe sometimes we're a little bit hesitant to do so. We find that even the smallest disclosures can lead to disclosures by others. And we even find the effect with strangers as well. We do find that positive implication for closeness and perceptions of others that goes into perceptions of self. Because if others see you positively, I think that has these positive feedback loops on yourself as well.
Today's guest is Emily Prinsloo, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Rice University, with a PhD from Harvard Business School and a master's from the University of Cambridge. Emily studies the psychology of everyday interactions, both in personal and in consumer settings. Her work sheds light on how we build trust, connect with others, and make everyday decisions, especially in moments we often overlook or misjudge. She's also someone who brings personal insight to her work, whether it's navigating dietary restrictions at group dinners or learning to accept praise without deflecting. In short, she's here to help us think differently about how we use our time to deepen relationships and make better choices. Thanks for joining us, Emily.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for thinking of me as well.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I'm really excited for this conversation because you've done a lot of really interesting research that I think has pretty great implications for how we think about spending our time in ways that foster more meaningful and happy lives. And some of that research is into how to forge meaningful conversations and deeper interpersonal connections. So I'm curious, what have you found about how to make that happen, especially about how being more open in everyday conversations can forge stronger connections?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think there's research on this topic in general. There's lots and lots of research. And when it comes to my own work, what I actually look at is how we disclose personal information to others. So that might be at disclosing personal failures or personal successes. And, you know, when it comes to successes, maybe we're quite open to disclosing those. But when it comes to failures or negative experiences, maybe sometimes we're a little bit hesitant to do so. But what my research actually finds is that when we disclose personal failures or negative experiences, that has very positive effects for interpersonal relationships. So what we find is that people actually end up disclosing their own negative experiences in return. So they kind of do a sense of matching in return to one's own disclosures. And that type of matching actually really increases the feelings of closeness to our counterparts. And in general, it makes us feel like we're not in the kind of not alone, and we're in the same boat as others. And so, you know, I used to be hesitant, for instance, to share about my work failures. Like, I mean, I've been rejected by journals, the academic kind of market is very competitive. But as I've started to implement some of my personal research, I've noticed that other people go through the same situations. And it actually makes me feel more motivated because I know that, you know, everybody goes through the same things.
Yeah. And when you think about how to share those failures, that those journal rejections in ways that would build that connection, are there ways that you could do it relatively quickly throughout a workday?
We find that even the smallest disclosures can lead to disclosures by others. And we even find the effect with strangers as well. So we don't have to only think about it as sharing with friends or sharing with close others. We actually find these effects with distant others or acquaintances. And we find that even those people will end up thinking of you in return, and their motivation will be to try to make you feel better. And often they do that by disclosing their own personal failures as well.
It's so interesting because I think when I think about disclosing a personal failure, it seems like a bigger conversation with someone that I know personally. What does a disclosure to a stranger or an acquaintance look like?
It could be anything really, right? You could tell somebody you have a bad day. I mean, often we answer the question like, how are you, with, you know, I'm great. And I think in America that makes absolute sense. But one thing that happens in Germany, for instance, is that we will actually say how we really feel. Like, we might say, hey, today I'm not having a good day. And I think sometimes that honesty can also be something that elicits a longer conversation about how you feel, and maybe actually allows you to get rid of some of the things that you're thinking about. And even that sense of just this saying out loud what you're thinking, sometimes that makes you feel better as well.
Yeah, it's so true. And these micro interactions can happen quickly with a barista standing in line. I think it's a good reminder that we can be a little more bold in how honest we think about sharing what's really going on, because that'll build this mutual connection.
Yeah, that just reminds me of a conversation I had with my Uber driver, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
I think Uber drivers are great situations too, because, you know, they're sitting in a car for a long time, and usually the conversations can be a little longer than just a minute. So I think, yeah, thinking of people that you might have the chance to talk to as people to talk to is something, because often we just end up looking at our phones or at our screens or reading the news. And I think that personal sense of connection and communication can really bond you and kind of create that happiness in everyday life.
It's so true. We interact with a lot more people than we realize, and those can be positive if we're focused and present for them.
Yeah.
It's a great reminder. Yeah, you've also found that the way we give and receive compliments says a lot about how we connect and can also be rooted culturally. I was wondering if you could talk more about that too.
Yeah. I mean, this, as you're saying this, it also makes me think of that often we actually don't give compliments enough. So there's great research by other researchers that actually shows that we underestimate the effectiveness or generally the positive outcomes of giving compliments. My research is kind of twofold in that regard. So on the one hand, I look at how to give compliments effectively. And so one of my papers looks at backhanded compliments. And this is a research project with Ovil Zaitzer, Mike Norton, and Allison Wood Brooks. And what we find is that what you shouldn't do is give a compliment that kind of diminishes the value of it by comparing a person to a certain group. So for instance, let's just say you're working with an intern. Rather than telling them, hey, you did a really good job for an intern, you could just say, hey, I really appreciated the analysis that you did, or I really appreciated the work you did today. Because making that comparison to a lower status group can sometimes kind of diminish the value and maybe even in some cases be perceived as an insult. And so giving genuine compliments that don't create any sort of contingency in them is the way that you can effectively give compliments. And then on other research that I have with Alice Moon, we also look at how to receive compliments. And what we find is that very often people actually deflect compliments. So maybe they might say, oh, it wasn't anything, or oh, it was just a quick and easy analysis. But rather than doing that, you could say, hey, thanks so much. That really means a lot. So accepting compliments with graciousness and gratitude, as opposed to deflecting them by diminishing one's own value in the work done. And generally, both giving more genuine compliments rather than backhanded compliments and accepting compliments more generally leads to these closer connections, makes you more likable, be perceived as more competent, and also makes people want to work with you as well in everyday settings.
I think that makes so much sense. But I know a lot of our listeners struggle with genuinely accepting compliments. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts on the shifts that we can start to make to think about compliments more as a gift than something to deflect, and how to accept them more graciously.
Absolutely, right? So yeah, we think of compliments as gifts, right? And if you think about it, imagine that somebody gives you a birthday gift and then you're like, oh, you know, I didn't want this gift. Like, that would kind of make them feel really bad because they've kind of taken that effort of thinking about what you might like and kind of give you that gift. And so usually if you're kind of happy and you're expressing your happiness towards the person about receiving the gift, right, that's going to make them happy too, because they feel like you value the thing that you told, that they told you. So yeah, I think having that shift into thinking of compliments as gifts, and then also the response as being gracious towards the counterpart, can create that positive connection.
Yeah, it makes sense. Is there a compliment that was hard for you to accept initially, but you've learned to accept it more graciously?
That's a good question. I think, I don't know if I have like a specific compliment, but I think compliments that are regarded regarding like success in general sometimes can be hard to accept, because I think I'm my own like worst critic. But I think I've learned that as I also learn to accept other people's compliments, I start believing in myself more. So, you know, anything that says, wow, congrats to, or like, I'm so proud of you for, you know, getting a position at Rice. Like, my dad does that all the time. And I kind of want to say to him, like, no, it's nothing. But then I have to remind myself, no, it is actually something. And I can be proud of like being, you know, an assistant professor and having, you know, a great position here. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hearing that there's this positive feedback loop of building deeper connections, but also being anchored in who we are and confidence in ourselves. It doesn't take very much time. Every time you accept one of these compliments or you appreciate that they're witnessing something that's worth recognition, you're building your confidence, but also building your connection with that person, which in turn will make you more willing and eager to accept and receive or give and receive compliments. So this sounds like a pretty fast way of building more meaningful confidence and connections throughout a given day.
Yeah, I would think so, right? So we haven't looked at the long-term implications empirically yet, but I think at least anecdotally, I absolutely agree with you in my personal setting. And we do find kind of that positive implication for closeness and perceptions of others. And I think that goes into perceptions of self, because if others see you positively, I think that has these positive feedback loops on yourself as well.
Makes sense. You've also done other research that found that people sometimes avoid ordering certain foods in an attempt to be polite to somebody with a dietary restriction, but that usually involves misjudging how the person with the restriction feels. What do you think that says about the way we project assumptions onto others in social situations?
Yeah. So I think generally speaking, it's obviously good to make decisions with another person in mind and not to be egoistical. But sometimes we can overdo it and try to be like overly polite or overly nice and overly accommodating. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't accommodate for others, but what we find in the context of eating out is that sometimes you will put back your own needs in favor of another person's needs. So the context actually started with me having a lactose intolerance, which means that I can't have dairy. And that also often means that I can't have dessert, because most desserts end up having like dairy, cream, things like that. And usually what would happen is that somebody would propose that we would order dessert, and then I'd be like, you go ahead, but I can't have the dessert because they don't have anything vegan or they don't have anything dairy free. But then what would happen is that we would cut dinner short because they'd be like, ah, you know what? I won't have the dessert after all. And typically that would make me feel really bad, because not only did I not get a dessert, but then now I also prevented somebody else from enjoying the dessert that I would have liked them to have enjoyed. But this kind of extends to other settings too. So think of maybe expecting mothers not being able to drink alcohol, or certain religions preventing you to eat certain foods, right? That is something that is your own decision. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you want other people to do the same type of restriction. In some cases you might, but most people probably don't. So what we often find is that, you know, people will overestimate how bad other people feel when you consume the food that they cannot eat. So really the best strategy is to either just order the food, or probably the better strategy is to ask whether the other person is okay with you ordering something or not. And as long as you have that consent, essentially, you know, maybe they actually would invite you to consume that food, because it would make them happy that you get that joy from eating together.
Yeah, I relate to this one so much. I have egg and gluten intolerance or allergy. And I think that part of what you just said is confidence that your dining partner will be honest with their preferences. And the thing about restrictions for me is I don't feel like I'm giving anything up at this point. I haven't eaten either food in over a decade. And so I do feel like I'm holding people back. And my least favorite is when somebody orders something they wanted with a modification that makes it taste worse. So no croutons, no eggs, no dressing on something. But then I feel obligated to eat it when I didn't actually want that item to begin with. So now I know it tastes worse for them, but I didn't want it. And so we end up in this loop of everybody sort of overhelping and projecting how other people feel, when I think we're pretty bad judges of it. Because just the question, how would I feel if I couldn't eat pizza, isn't helpful, because to somebody who hasn't eaten pizza with gluten for a decade, they're not really missing it. And so I think that the assumption that somebody feels the way we would in that situation can get us into a lot of sticky situations. Part two of this two-part episode is coming to you next week.